Well, I apologize if I made any remarks about your Estonian heritage that got back to you.
That's okay. No.
I mean, somebody has to come from Estonia, and... I really didn't mean that.
But it is a sore spot with the Estonians because it's we're no different than the Poles and the Hungarians, and you know that the Soviets came in and took over the country, and we're just such non-entities that not even jokes about us.
Well, that's true. In downtown, though, you have a little bit of your Estonian background in there in terms of the. The landscape and so forth. It's they call it the winterlands with an H in there, right?
Well, that was the whole northeastern European area. It was called the winterlands, and Estonia is where I'm from, and I just kind of wanted to include that in there. So the way we included it was to have Ali and Carrie run through the doors of the Estonian house, which does exist. It's a brownstone on 34th and 2nd, and they ran through the doors. And the whole idea of downtown is collective memory. And in the Estonian house, it's so strong that when they ran through the doors, they were in Estonia.
Mm-hmm. You were actually born in Europe, weren't you?
I was born in a refugee camp in Germany.
Mm-hmm. 1946?
Right.
And when did you come to the United States?
I came in August of 1951. I was 5 years old and went right to kindergarten.
Know the language at that point, or did you have to pick it up as you went?
Yeah, pretty much. I attended German kindergarten in a refugee camp, so I was bilingual at that age, but I didn't speak English. And then I went right to kindergarten, and there was a large Estonian group in my hometown, plus a large Latvian group, and a large Jewish group. And there was like enough of us there so that you really didn't feel odd.
Where did you grow up?
In Lakewood, New Jersey.
Mm-hmm. I guess this area would have a lot of people from with a European background here, especially after the war. There must have been a tremendous amount of immigration.
Well, it was several years after the war. Eleanor Roosevelt was instrumental in the McCarthy era because the northeastern Europeans were the most opposed to communism, so that we were the safest bet. So during the height of McCarthy era, they allowed a lot of the eastern European refugees to come to this country. So we did come all in 51 in a big mass.
Growing up in New Jersey, did you find yourself an artist, an aspiring young artist?
That was, my goal all along has been, I was always considered one of the best artists in the class or in the school kind of a thing, and had arguments with the art teachers. But I didn't go right into art school. I went into the Army after I started college. And I went to Special Forces. Total departure from what you would think an artist would go into.
Yeah, where were you stationed?
I was stationed in Battles, Germany. I was very gung-ho. I went through OCS and airborne training and Special Forces qualifications. And at the time, this was in 1966 when I went in, there were so many officers in the Special Forces dying in Vietnam that they were reassigning junior officers into slots all around the world, to take their place. So in the height of wanting to go to Vietnam and be a hero, I got sent to a ski lodge in Berchtesgaden.
I think you lucked out.
Now, in hindsight, yes, I agree. But at the time, I was disappointed, believe it or not.
What happened when you got out of the service?
I got out of service and I went back to school.
Where were you going to school?
I had attended at Monmouth College in West Long Branch, New Jersey, for a couple of semesters, and I quit and joined the Army. And then when I got out, I went to a junior college. I finagled my own early out. I was the adjutant of the company, and everybody was out on maneuvers, so I flew down from, at this time we were in Fort Devens, Massachusetts. I flew down and I got all the paperwork. I walked into a college in 69 in uniform, and they gave me Ocean County College, and they gave me my acceptance paper right there. Flew back, typed it all up, approved it myself, got out 3 months early. Then I went to a junior college for the summer semesters, and then in the fall I ended up in San Francisco at the Art Institute.
Mm, and that's where you had the most intense training there, at the Art Institute in San Francisco?
No, I gave up art. I went there, and I couldn't understand what they were doing. I couldn't understand the whole psychology of the art movement at the time. I was trying to draw the model to look like the model, and everybody else was drawing, I don't know, you know, something totally different. And I thought I had some sort of an intellectual shortcoming, and I quit art and came back to the East Coast, went back to Monmouth College as an English major.
Well, somewhere along the line, you reconciled both your literary ambitions. Obviously, you were interested in doing something with regard to that, or you wouldn't have been an English major, probably, with your ability as an artist. These illustrations are absolutely beautiful, and
thank you.
It shows that it shows that you're certainly not an amateur. I mean, that's for sure. So tell me how this came together, writing and the art.
I had a professor at Monmouth College in Long Branch, and he was the one that I took a life drawing classes for some credits when I switched to creative writing classes. And he said I should really be in the arts, and talked me into switching majors back into art. And all of my art education, even at the San Francisco Art Institute, has been in the traditional art, fine art, not in the illustration. And he was instrumental in bringing me back into art, giving me a lot of self-confidence that I needed, a tremendous boost. And he himself was like an extremely gifted sculptor, so that I had that sense that here's a man who had faith in me, and he was exceptional artist himself, that it brought me over, and I had the confidence. And then after Monmouth College, when I graduated, I moved to New York City, and I went to the Art Students League for a while, which is another traditional, very basic fine art school. And I think that's the reason for whatever there is in my artwork. It's really a foundation, you know, learning the scales if I was a musician kind of thing.
How did you hook up with your collaborator, Tappan King?
Tappan King. Tappan,
like the Tappan Zee Bridge.
Yeah, you know, he laughs and says that he's related to Burger, you know, Burger King. But he was a neighbor of mine on Staten Island, and he is an editor at and a marketing consultant at Bantam Books.
Excuse me, you live on Staten Island now?
No. I lived there for 3 years. I've lived up in Germantown, New York.
Tappan
now.
Still lives on Staten Island.
Tappan lives on Staten Island. And I had been running. I used to run from my house to Verrazano Bridge and back, about a distance of 8 miles. And I had new running shoes or something, but my feet were bleeding. And I got into Tappan's house and saw him sitting up on the lawn with his wife working on their yard. And I walked up there, and I started telling him about this idea I had for a book, a children's book. And it was supposed to be an very profusely illustrated, beautiful children's book, the kind that I would want my child to have, not the kind that I have experienced myself. And I started talking to him about it, and he seemed to get interested in it right from the beginning. And at first, it was him helping me to put together a children's book. And he was a house husband, and at this point, I was home watching my daughter and working at home and fixing up this house that I had bought on Staten Island. And we would just get together in diners and stuff, and we'd be building a story. And it got to be like creating a universe. We started, you know, all the characters had family trees, and we tied loose ends in and stuff. And for quite a while, the story was verbal, just between both of us, just as a game. And then we took ourselves seriously, and we really got down to writing the book. And Arbor House bought it as a children's book initially, and then asked us to rewrite it as an adult book. So it is an adult book. We changed the protagonist's age from 9 to 13, which made a big difference. It's sort of like moving a hole 4 inches over, you know, because we have scenes in there, like in the sauna and stuff, whereas a 9-year-old, it's a lot of fun. And you change it around to being 13 and 14-year-old kids in a sauna, then you're dealing with all sorts of other problems. And the way they move, as a 9-year-old, they ran everywhere. Now they're more adult. They're at that transitional period. So that everything changed in the book except the feeling, I think, and the fun. I think the fun is still in there.
Who did the actual writing?
Both of us.
Who set up the typewriter and knocked out the words?
Well, we finagled, Tappan finagled through a contact of mine, a word processor, so that most of the actual putting into the word processor and the actual typing and the wordsmith is Tappan. I did a lot of editing of his work, which he did based on what we talked about and stuff. And at the same time, I provided him with most of the dialogue. And it would be given to him in scraps of paper or in tape recorders. I would take a tape recorder in my studio, and because I, to me, the whole thing has been a movie in my head. I see the actors, I see the, you know, the characters moving around. I can hear them talking. So it was quicker for me to pick up a tape recorder and talk in two voices by myself in my studio and then hand it to him rather than the quotation marks and the exclamation points and worrying about the structure and stuff.
Tell me about the artwork. How do you do it?
What That's pen and ink work.
All pen and ink?
All pen and ink work, yeah. And it's quite large. The that drawing that you're looking at of Finn and Fiona is about 18 by 28 or something like that.
Now, you said a moment ago that this started out being a children's book, and now you consider it an adult book. But, you know, in reading through it, it is a book that certainly can be read by a child, perhaps not a 9-year-old, but certainly one over 10, I would think, could read and understand this. It seems to me it reads as easily as the Alice in Wonderland.
Well, that was a sort of a book, Gulliver's Travels, Alice in Wonderland, sort of a feeling and audience that we wanted, that it would be read by a bright child who, you know, who would get into fantasy and stuff. Essentially, we did not want to write down to anyone. And it was originally, you know, to be a children's book.
But you're saying,
well, we
an
deal
adult,
with
a mature adult could also enjoy the book.
Yes, it's escapist. I think that it like with the graffitis and some of the problems and stuff, that there's enough of the familiar in the book and historical. There's references in there that the more you know about New York City, you know, the historical sense, the more things you'll pick up from there, like the street that leads to the Pie Woman really does exist. And there are these little kind of clues and stuff, so that the more you know about New York City, the more you get out of the book.
How do you consider yourself now as a primarily an illustrator or primarily a writer?
I came to be an author in sort of an oblique situation. The idea of the book originally was supposed to showcase my artwork, and Tappan was involved with doing that. Tappan is a professional writer, so he was a great collaborator to work with. We, you know, together we put this book out. I don't know what's going to happen next. I don't know whether we have some plans in mind as to what we're going to do, but I guess we'll see what happens with this one.
Tappan has written a lot of science fiction, hasn't he?
He's written a novel, and he's written articles, and he's done interviews. He interviewed Jay Gould for the science fiction I think it was for Locus, but I'm not sure, one of the trade magazines. And he's written extensively. He's also a copy writer for jackets and for articles, and he's got a big advertising package that he's put together and all by himself written a whole copy for, and he's very proud of.
Would you want to have another collaboration?
With Tappan, yes. Tappan and I, we worked, I thought, extremely well. We played off each other, and it didn't take long for us to be in the same spot. You know, and when you both realize or agree to where you are, then you can both leave and discover other things and still come back to the, you know, you have that thread is there. And that's what happened with Downtown, that he could go off and come back and tell me something that he found in Downtown, whereas in the beginning we had to define what Downtown was. At first, we would argue about it's not a place where you're down. You know, Downtown is sort of a haven. It's a sanctuary.
You work in kind of an unusual location, don't you?
Yeah, I work in the Halls Estate, which is in Tivoli, New York, right on the Hudson. About 26 years ago, an Estonian and a group of Estonians bought the mansion on 30 acres of beautiful old forest with a big iron gate and a mild dirt road to it, this estate that Eleanor Roosevelt's grandparents owned and her uncle managed. And she summered there. And in fact, last autumn, when it was Eleanor Roosevelt's centennial, 13 carfuls of the Roosevelt family showed up. And I was working on these illustrations for this book. And in fact, Elliot Roosevelt Jr.'s wife is also an illustrator. And it turned out, as we were talking and she was looking at the work, and she seemed to get a kick out of what I was doing, it turned out that her niece is working at Arbor House, who published the book, in the publicity department. So I'd gotten to meet her through that way, too. So it's like a terribly small world the more the more you get around.
You're active in Estonian affairs, aren't you?
Yes. I did sing in the Estonian Men's Choir until they changed the Amtrak train schedule, and I'm hoping to start again in the fall. But the last train back is 8:20, and the rehearsals are over at 9:30.
Well, I want to make sure that when I go on the air with this report that I don't mispronounce your name. But it looks simple as I see
it. It is. It's phonetic.
Vito Polycarpus.
Right. The Estonian alphabet is a phonetic alphabet, and the two I's make it a long I.
It looks longer and more complicated than it is. Well, it's certainly a beautiful book. The illustrations are just gorgeous, and I wish you the best with it.
I don't know if you realize, but the cover was cited by the Society of Illustrators, which I did, too. I was kind of very proud of that. That's a big honor.
In what regard was it cited?
Well, out of 1,700 submissions, there are 60 citations given for cover art and two awards. You know, well, I didn't get one of the two awards, but a citation is fantastic.
Well, it's a beautiful cover, and it's a beautiful book. And so you're off to a nice start with your collaborator, Tavin King. I wish you the best with this, and I hope to see more, and maybe we'll be able to get together again and chat some more when you come out with book number two.
My pleasure.